When did right become wrong? When did up become down? And how did common sense become uncommon? That's what I want to address in this episode because words don't mean what they used to, and there are two movements in the 20th century that we can quickly go over to get an idea as to how this all came to be. Because it's hard to have a conversation with people when we can't even agree on the fundamentals of things. And that's what we find ourselves in. So before I get into that, if you have not yet signed up for the exclusive content on my website, then by all means do so because you don't know what you're missing, such as this episode. Well, let's dive into what I want to talk about. So what is common sense? According to dictionary.com, common sense, a noun that means good sense and sound judgment in practical matters. A common sense approach. Problem is, there's no such thing as common sense anymore because a lot of things have lost their meaning, and I want to address that through postmodernism. Postmodernism is a philosophical trait. This is from Britannica.com, but as you can see, so many ads. I'm just going to clean that up and just go to the print version of this. This postmodernism, how it relates to philosophy, relativity, and all that, and how we basically point to what Paul says in the Bible, how man became too smart for their own good, that we now overthink things. So technically, postmodernism, as I summarize it, is literally overthinking things to the point where it nullifies the meaning of the word. So there's some abstract things that I'm going to pull out from this postmodernism definition from Britannica.com. I can't go over all of it because it's just very, very long, and I'm not devoting all my attention to it, but I do want to bring attention to, I think it's point number two on this, but let's talk about the first two: postmodernism and modern philosophy. Postmodernism is largely a reaction against the intellectual assumptions and values of the modern period in the history of Western philosophy, roughly the 17th through the 19th centuries. So, indeed, the doctrines characteristic associated with postmodernism can be fairly described as the straightforward denial of general philosophical viewpoints that were taken for granted during the 18th century Enlightenment, though they were not unique to that period. So they break down on Britannica.com some of the viewpoints of postmodernism, but it's the first two that I really want, or two or three that I want to focus on. So let's see. Number two. The descriptive and explanatory statements of scientists and historians can, in principle, be objectively true or false. The postmodern denial of this viewpoint, which follows from the rejection of an objective natural reality, is sometimes expressed by saying there is no such thing as truth. So this is the big deal as to why there's no common sense, because common sense is on the bedrock of understood use or an absolute truth. And postmodernism basically challenges that to say there is no absolute truth. By extension, that means that God himself doesn't exist in this sense because Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life, but there is no such thing as truth, therefore God cannot be. So once you'll see how this all ties neatly as to how this all is abstracted from this ideology for why God is eradicated from all this. And without God, there are no morals, and without God, there's no truth. And they're basically pulling that up. So I think it's number three here. Through the use of reason and logic, and with more specialized tools provided by science and technology, human beings are likely to change themselves and their societies for the better. It is reasonable to expect that future societies will be more humane, more just, more enlightened, and more prosperous than they are now. Postmodernists denied this enlightenment faith in science and technology as instruments of human progress. Indeed, many postmodernists hold that the misguided or unguided pursuit of scientific and technological knowledge led to the development of technologies for the killing on a massive scale of World War II. Some go as far to say that science and technology, and even reason and logic, are inherently destructive and oppressive because they have been used by evil people, especially during the 20th century, to destroy and oppress others. So This is laying on the groundwork for something that I'm going to get to at the end of all this to wrap it up all neatly as to how all this comes to a head. Because postmodernism, I said there's one of two things that have contributed to, I guess, the chaos that we have today in our society, in which we cannot agree on something fundamental. We cannot say something is wrong because someone says, no, that's right. Like, I remember being in physics class in Fulton College, and I mentioned this other colleague of mine in that classroom. We're talking about a political science professor there. I didn't take him, but I only heard about his reputation because it was infamous. And I happened to mention that, yeah, I heard that he's super extreme and whatnot. And my colleagues say, but he's right. Like, oh, crud. That told me everything, that we were not lining up on similar ideologies here. And postmodernism is one of the reasons to blame, because as I think it was mentioned here, that there's no such thing as truth. That's why you hear this expression called your truth. Go tell them your truth. I'm living my truth. Your experiences are one thing. That doesn't mean it's truth. So that's the thing that people have basically have a convoluted understanding of what reality is. And some people create a perception of reality, and now we have these arguments about identity. Like, you're not born the way you are, you eventually have to identify with something. And now we have individuals literally in the identifying with animal spirits, and they have to basically tend to those animal spirits, or they're going to lose their connection with their so-called identity. This is something true. If you're not familiar with that, I don't really encourage you to check it out, but you can check it out for yourself. Dear Girl, and how she was picked up by Twitch to be basically the human resources individual for Twitch to oversee the platform. People are following the rules. The thing is, Dear Girl is neither a deer nor a girl. So there's a lot of different things that go in there, but because this individual identifies as both of those things, we have to respect that instead of possibly discussing any possible difficulties with identity, such as especially gender dysphoria, which I will get to in a bit. So, with all this being said, that there is no such thing as truth because it's being challenged by the postmodernist. How is it that it's become a political movement? Because it is a political movement. I used to say that Marxism was on the march because Marxism, as I understood it growing up, especially hearing it from my parents, the previous generation that battled it, especially in Central America when it was spreading around like wildfire, it was straight up communism slash Marxism. Because communism is basically the form of practice of the ideologies of the extreme socialism as Karl Marx laid it out. So that's what we just to encompass it all because we can break these things down to like their individual fundamentals, which is called Marxism. Well, there is a new form of it called neo-Marxism that I was not entirely familiar with. So for that, whoops, let me pull this up for you. So, what is neo-Marxism? Neo-Marxism is a more sophisticated and modern theory which preserves the major feature of Marx's approach, which is economic determinism, inequality, and exploitation. Neo-Marxism says humanity is unequal. Instead of classical Marxist classes, the exploiters and the exploited are presented by states and groups of states. The world is thus divided into the rich and the poor, into developed and developing, capitalist and non-capitalist countries. Neo-Marxists also say, or neo-Marxism also says, foreign policies of states are determined by groups' interests of exploiters that are the developed and the exploited that are developing. The exploiting, developed and rich, states want to keep the status quo and continue to exploit. The exploited, developing, poor countries want to break the status quo and get rid of unfair terms of relations of the asymmetric dependence. Developed countries are not really interested in advanced development of the developing ones. This is what neo-Marxism argues, and it is basically some of the line of thought preached by Emmanuel Wallerstein. He was a prominent American sociologist and philosopher. He was the author of the concept of world system and world system analysis as the main methodological approach of neo-Marxism, the modern world system 1974, and another one called World Systems Analysis, Theory, and Methodology. You can almost hear the extrapolations of the modern world system or postmodernist kind of aligned there. So this is what they call the father of neo-Marxism. These are the influences on government policies and stuff that have permeated our education system, and in some cases, those that bought into that, that have gone into power, have tried to influence through laws and legislation to basically enact some of these things to rectify what is seemed to be wrong. But the thing is, wrong based on whose perspective. When there's no such thing as truth, it's really hard to say that is wrong. There are fundamental, abstract, and wrong things, such as slavery is wrong. So then we have the other extreme that leads to the postmodernist thinking that I'd say that it's overthinking. It gets to the point where things are so, they sound so intelligent that they're not, these postmodernists, that they overthink themselves into such a hole that they basically dug themselves into a hole. There's two lines of thoughts, one which I'll get to in a bit, which is the transgender issue, and the other one that I want to address right now is what it means to actually have discourse. When you have some kind of dialogue and discourse, we have now what is called cancel culture. And cancel culture is really built on the bedrock of postmodernist thinking that if your opinion affects my truth, thereby in hurting me and I feel attacked, you cannot express that. But we live in a country where supposedly freedom of speech is protected and practiced because it can be expressed here. That was the whole point, one of the bedrock things. But now we're told by these supposed champions of freedom of speech that your freedom of speech is hate speech. Well, who defines hate speech? If we don't have an absolute truth, we cannot agreeably say what is hate speech. And hate speech by in of it itself is not a violation of the First Amendment. Violence, an incite to cause violence, is. And these same postmodernists would argue that your expression of, say, conservative values that fly in the face of progressive ideologies is oppressive, is spiteful, and in some case, hate speech, and therefore must be squashed or canceled. But these same postmodernists, as I'll show you in a bit, can call on the destruction of the systematic destruction of an established system, call on civil disobedience, disorder, rioting, looting, and pillaging in the name of eradicating hate. So they're fanning hate to get rid of hate. And they defend that as freedom of speech. They're practicing the First Amendment, which doesn't make any sense. But to them, in their truth, it must be true because they're going against the exploiters, as expressed by neo-Marxism. See, so these two ideologies or philosophies, let's call them, have merged. And we're seeing it all play out through a movement that's called Black Lives Matter. This is from their website, Black Lives Matter, on the part about what they believe. Now, Black Lives Matter, if you take it at face value, you would believe that it's about black lives and bringing attention to their plight, right? Well, get a load of this exchange from CNN not too long ago between CNN anchor Don Lemon and Terry Crews, who at the time was actually opposed to the Black Lives Matter movement slash organization, and got heat for it. He's ultimately apologized for his stance because he supposedly wasn't enlightened enough. But as he stood his ground, this is how that exchange went.
But here's what I have to say. The Black Lives Matter movement was started because it was talking about police brutality. If you want an all Black Lives Matter movement that talks about gun violence in communities, including, black communities, then start that movement with that name. But that's not what Black Lives Matter is about. It's not an all-encompassing. So if you're talking about, if someone started a movement that said, cancer matters, and then someone comes in and says, why aren't you talking about HIV? It's not the same thing. We're talking about cancer. So the Black Lives Matter movement is about police brutality and injustice in that manner, not about what's happening in black neighborhoods. There are people who are working on that issue, and if you want to start that issue, why don't you start it?
So that's what Don Lemon said. He said it's about police brutality. So this is, again, from the website Black Lives Matter. And I'm going to skip over the intro on how they came to be because it's actually inaccurate. Because they say 4 years ago, this is 2020, they say 4 years ago, that's not true. They've been around for 6 years. They're just trying to erase the history of two other co-founders, one of them that's still around there, Sean King, one of the most prominent activists of Black Lives Matter, who happens to be a white man that literally identifies as a black man. And he was one of the co-founders. The other one, I have to get the name, I'll put it up here somewhere, who was actually arrested for prostituting a minor. And that's why they're trying to erase when exactly this whole thing got started because they don't want to associate themselves with them, even though they're the ones that literally got this going. Because Sean King is currently under fire because since the passing of Chadwick Boseman, Sean King was basically capitalizing on his death by promoting his book. There is no. There's no shame among these individuals. So, in the years since, Black Lives Matter has committed to struggling together and to imagining and creating a world free of anti-blackness, where every black person has the social, economic, and political power to thrive. And so, this goes over some history of some incidents that encouraged in the act, but let's say Black Lives Matter began as a call to action in response to state-sanctioned violence and anti-black racism. The gotcha word there, neo-Marxism, and you'll see what I mean. Our intentions from the very beginning was to connect black people from all over the world who have a shared desire for justice to act together in their communities. The impetus for that commitment was and still is the rampant and deliberate violence inflicted on us by the state. So it's, in essence, it's what neo-Marxism argues, that it's the exploiters taking advantage of the exploited. So here are the results of the collective efforts. Black Lives Matter Global Network is as powerful as it is because of our membership, our partners, our supporters, our staff, and you. Our continued commitment to liberation for all black people, okay, means that we are continuing the work of our ancestors and fighting for our collective freedom because it is our duty. Every day, we recommit to healing ourselves and each other and to co-creating alongside comrades, which is a term used by communists, allies, and family, a culture where each person feels seen, heard, and supported. We acknowledge, respect, and celebrate differences and commonalities. We work vigorously for freedom and justice for Black people and, by extension, all people. We intentionally build and nurture a beloved community that is bonded together through a beautiful struggle that is restorative, not depleting. We are unapologetically black in our positioning. In affirming that Black Lives Matter, we need not qualify our position. To love and desire freedom and justice for ourselves is a prerequisite for wanting the same for others. We see ourselves as part of the global black family and are aware of the different ways we are impacted or privileged as black people who exist in different parts of the world. We are guided by the fact that all black lives matter, regardless of actual or perceived sexual identity, gender expression, economic status, ability, disability, religious beliefs or disbeliefs, immigration status, or location. We make space for transgender brother and sisters to participate and lead, and we are self-reflective and do the work required to dismantle cisgendered privilege and uplift black trans folk, especially black trans women who continue to be disproportionately impacted by trans antagonistic violence. We build a space that affirms black women and is free from sexism, misogyny, and environments in which men are centered. We practice empathy. We engage comrades with the intent to learn about and connect with their context. We make our spaces family friendly and enable parents to fully participate with their children. We dismantle the patriarchal practice that requires mothers to work double shifts so they can mother in private even as they participate in public justice work. We disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structure requirement by supporting each other as extended families and villages that collectively care for one another, especially our children, to the degree that mothers, parents, and children are comfortable. We foster a queer affirming network. When we gather, we do so with the intention of freeing ourselves from the tight grip of heteronormative thinking, or rather the belief that all in the world are heterosexual, unless she, he, or they disclose otherwise. We cultivate an intergenerational and communal network free from ageism. We believe that all people, regardless of age, show up with the capacity to lead and learn. We embody the and practice justice, liberation, and peace in our engagements with one another. There isn't any mention whatsoever here about police brutality. So what Don Lemon says is not reflected by the movement itself. that he supposedly is a part of. But everything that's laid out here is speaking to groups of people that have positioned themselves and call themselves groups built around an identity of sorts based on their truth. Their truth, something that postmodernists have brainwashed them to think, and through their actions, they're taking against the status quo, which is the exploiters, is something that neo-Marxists do. Now, reading it straight up would almost seem like this is a very peaceful movement, which is has been completely against the grain here, as they're mentioning. But for that, I'm leaving for another video for a follow-up. This one has been mostly to describe that words don't mean what they used to mean. And right is not wrong, or right is wrong, up is down, left is right, all these different things. It's everything's all over the place because now we have a spectrum that is ever changing because we can identify anything and everything as something. Which now brings me to the transgender argument. I'm not going to dwell on this. I'm just going to touch on it as to why the things get so confused. Because before the transgender movement really started picking up steam, we were dealing with the gay rights issue. We were told that people are born gay, and therefore it's not a choice, which flies in the face of everything that the conservatives would argue and religious folk would also say. Because if it's not a choice and you're born that way, it must be a gene. So where does this transgender fit in? Well, the transgender argument argues that there's no such thing as gender. It's something that is an illusionary thing that's assigned by the patriarchy. In other words, white privileged people, white privileged men to be exact, installed it on humanity, and people were conformed to either be this or that gender. But your sexual identity is something entirely different, that you can actually choose something different, because sometimes your spirit does not match the vessel, and therefore you can change. And that confuses things, because if a man doesn't do anything to change his body per se to become a woman, but just dresses like one, then suddenly can identify as a woman, then the question becomes, what is a woman? And when you have PhDs, people that do sex education, say a woman is anything she wants to be, that makes no sense. Because once again, that's not an absolute truth. Because again, postmodernist thinking say that there is no truth. So if there is no truth, then what is a woman? What is a man? And if there is no such thing as man or woman, then how can someone be gay or lesbian? You see how this thing starts throwing everything up in the air. They dug themselves into a hole. This is all part of the same group, LGBTQ. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans. And then they added a bunch of other letters to say asexual and something else. I just lose count of all that. But therein goes my point, that they become so smart that they basically dug themselves into an intellectual hole with no way out. Because if one thing is to be believed, then the other one can't. And that's what we find ourselves with in this whole issue about words not meaning anything anymore. The chaos that ensues. So we need to get back to some kind of common sense, some kind of common sense, if we're ever going to progress as a people together, because this is not sustainable. When you have people that believe that there's 72 different genders, well, who's to say it's just 72? Exactly. And some people say it's an infinite spectrum. That's because anybody can identify as whatever they want, and it opens the doors to a fluid ageism, where some men are saying, and now I literally seen this in a documentary, where a man in his 40s or 50s says he lives as a 8-year-old or 6-year-old girl. I don't want to understand that, because if we're going to allow things like that to be excused, we're probably most likely denying mental health care that the individual might need. That's why I had mentioned gender dysphoria. Because it's when you're going to talk about gender dysphoria, not argue it, but talk about it. It's a sensitive subject, as are any subjects that deal with the mind. So I wanted to just to put that out there, that if you're having trouble understanding what the heck is going on with society today as to why people can't even agree on basic things, or why the media does this or that, you can point to postmodernism philosophy and neo-Marxism. These are the two prevalent ideologies that have permeated the left wing of the political parties here in the United States and has literally taken over it. There was a Red Scare during the Cold War era in the 20th century. Joseph McCarthy led the charge and everybody said he was full of it because he suspected that these communists or Marxists had infiltrated Hollywood, the mainstream news media of the time, and everybody said he was crazy. He even said that they were probably within government. It only took two generations to prove that he was right. And they have gone even further than that because now they control many of our institutions today. And a lot of the institutions that everybody argues that have issues are the very ones that are being run by people that associate themselves with neo-Marxist ideologies and, of course, postmodernism thinking. So there you have it. That's what I wanted to share with you all. I hope this has shed some light on some of the issues. I'm not tackling any of those things right now, per se, but I am doing another video that will follow this up as to what is going on with the rioting, the looting, and where things stand. So stay tuned for that video. See you in the next one.